Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He's taking the bait! It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century, from I Love Lucy to News Radio, and I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter-producer for Decider.com, and by that flub of me not stopping, you know what that means. This is a quarantine episode, I'm not editing anything, there's gonna be no sound clips from the episodes and no music, it's just gonna be pure unfiltered, really gay, good talk about I Dream of Jeannie, and you're gonna love it because honestly, this is our life now. And you know me, I'm going to be vacillating back between laughing and crying because that is quarantine life, baby. 2020. This week, it's super special. It's basically like Pride Month just never ended, or it went away for July, which was an awful month, and it's come back in August, which is, I don't know, still awful. This week, I am joined by, from RuPaul's Drag Race Season 12, Jackie Cox.
Hi, Brett.
Hi. And the, like, producer mastermind behind the amazing TLC show, Dragnificent Mike Kelton.
Woohoo! Hi. Wow. You're crushing it, Brett. This is iconic.
I have more energy now just hearing your intro than I've had the last 5 months in quarantine.
Shooting you guys full of energy.
Love it. Alam is welcome. My goodness. How exciting.
Wow, yeah. So I'm super glad to have a consortium of drag knowledge from all across the spectrum on the podcast at once.
I mean, it's going to be Dragnificent. It will be.
Thank you. Would you mind just saying that one more time for the blip? Yeah, it's Dragnificent.
Drag me down the aisle into Dragnificent. Yeah. Google all the titles, honey, get into it.
Well, we're here, you know?
Yeah, bum, bum, bum. Oh, Canada's Drag Race. I would like, Jackie, what are you thinking of Canada's Drag Race? Can you actually talk about that? You're Canadian. Are you loving it?
I love it. What's not to love? I think these queens are excited to be there. They have so much energy, and I live for it. And it's the country of my birth, so I'm so happy. And yeah, I got nothing but good things to say about Canada's Drag Race.
2020 has been a great year for drag. And you know what else was a great year? 1968. This week, ooh, we are traveling to December 9th, 1968. Funny Girl rolled the box office. I Heard It Through the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye topped the charts, and NBC aired the I Dream of Jeannie episode How to Marry an Astronaut. Jackie and Mike, you must have seen How to Marry an Astronaut before today.
Oh my goodness. I think I've watched every episode of I Dream of Jeannie, but definitely because, you know, as we'll get into it,
yeah,
all the episodes that feature Jeannie's evil twin sister are my can for drag.
I unlike Jackie, I haven't seen every episode, but if you go and ask like 11-year-old closeted gay version of me, I have watched every episode of I Dream of Jeannie, because I think like I just like sat there and whenever it was on, I could like smell it. I was like, I need to turn on TV Land right now.
Yeah.
And I would just watch it. But I definitely watch this one, and I love an evil twin energy. And I love a wedding. I love a wedding where people switch places, because that's great, I guess.
This episode has it all. So if listeners have not watched Drag Race, then you don't know that Jackie Cox made I Dream of Jeannie hella relevant in the year 2020 this year. Mm-hmm. Because
thanks. I did what I could.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to give some context for a little bit of my love for Jeannie, which spilled into my season of Drag Race. And talk about a little bit, in addition to just it being like a colorful TV show with like, you know, a gorgeous girl wearing bright colors and, you know, handsome men who are wearing uniforms.
Oh, yes. It,
one of the only bits of representation of any sort of Middle Eastern culture I saw on TV that wasn't, you know, the Gulf War when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say much, but, you know, remember that, you know, Barbara Eden did speak Farsi, which is the language of Iran, which is the language I grew up speaking with my mom in the very first episode. And so, talked about that little bit on the show, and you know, I've gotten dragged for it. I'm like, doesn't she know that Barbara Eden's not Persian? And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I know that Barbara Eden's not Persian.
Look at her.
It was the closest thing I had as a
season
kid,
one
know?
Is in black and white, so like, I don't know, maybe, but like that show comes screaming in color, and it is very clear she is a spar.
She's really not Persian. I can confidently say that Barbara Eden is not Persian.
I mean, I can confidently say, like, no people of color in this cast, period.
None. And you know, that's okay. Sure. It was the 60s network television. And, you know, we have to keep in mind that it wasn't until, I believe, 67, 68, we had the first interracial kiss on TV on Star Trek. So, you know, of my two loves in this world. So, you know, it's obvious it was a different time. And, you know, at least there was some, and at least it was a positive portrayal. Sure, it was full of stereotypes, but at least it was, you know, terrorists and bombs, which is the more common portrayal in media from the 70s and on. So at least the moment in the 60s where the Middle East was more fun.
So like, what is it? So like, just in general, I think we all actually share the same, like Mike, when you were talking about how like you could just like sense that it was on, that just like brought back so many memories. Like I remember when it hit Nick at Night, and I was just obsessed with this show, more so than Bewitched, which is also, you know, gay canon. And I'm trying to figure out, like, why, is it just like, it was just like bright and colorful and irreverent and fun? Strong female lead?
Yeah. What is it? I wonder if it's because Bewitched, though it is gay canon in its own way, it was at the end of the day about, you know, a married straight couple living in the burbs. Whereas there's something a little queerer about, you know, an unmarried couple for most of the series living in Florida and like,
yeah,
he's an astronaut. That's a much sexier job than a, you know, advertising.
Yeah,
for sure. She feels like a beard to me, like for most of the series. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
She's like my Tracy Goldenberg for like middle school, or honestly, my Sarah Michelle Gellar, who was my like my official beard in middle school. I was like, I think Buffy's hot, and everyone's like, "You're gay," and I'm like, "You're right."
Oh wow, yeah, I had a Buffy poster on my wall under the guise of, "Yeah, I have a crush on her."
Both
of you beat my beard in middle school was Jerry Ryan, 7 of 9, Star Trek Voyager. So.
Yeah,
there you go. There you go, friends. I had her poster in my locker, and that's that on that.
This now feels like it could be one of those like Cosmo Digital videos asking like homeless gay men. It's like who is your middle school beard? Because we all had one.
Yeah. So like but I should have known I was gay because one of the main draws to the show for me were Larry Hagman and Bill Daly, because I've had a type for a very long time, and just honestly, men in uniform for one thing is You're getting my interest.
Hot and problematic.
Oh my God. That's how I like them. But I just like had the biggest crushes on Roger and Tony. And so I just rewatched this episode in my quarantine binging. It's from, I think, season 3 or 4. I think it's like the Mod Party episode. They go to a party and Jeannie like blinks them into togas, and then she blinks them out into the woods to go hunting in their like little Greek togas. And
love it.
And Tony gets like caught in like a net and gets hoisted up, and his skirt falls down. He's wearing this like black and white striped briefs and the rain, and they're soaking wet, and they're both like wrestling trying to get him down. And watching that for the first time in like 26 years or whatever, it just all came back to me like, oh my God, I remember every frame of this scene.
I wonder, right? Because, you know, on Bewitched, Darren doesn't really have that best buddy counterpart. You know, he has his boss, who's kind of like somewhat his male sidekick. But, you know, here on Genie, you know, Major Nelson has Major Healy, and still he has a boss. You know, there's definitely that. This is you're my best guy. We're both dealing with this crazy woman who would want a half naked girl in my apartment.
He's so put out by her too. He's so Major Nelson is also like, he's a bachelor who's also like, this fucking half naked woman in my house is driving me crazy and is so annoying. It's kind of big gay energy in a way.
That is pretty
huge gay energy. Yeah,
huge gay energy. Like,
the gayest thing you could do is have a man walk into an apartment in Florida with Palm Springs energy and see a half naked woman in like that's like, looks like the wind could blow and it could fall off of her body, and him to be like, I need you to get out of here.
It's too much.
You're ruining my life. So the other reason that I wanted you on is because we have a canonical gay on the show. Hayden Rourke, who plays Dr. Bellows, is also has a big real life gay energy, which, so did y'all clock that? Did y'all know that before I started screaming about it nonstop online?
I don't think I knew it like in my body, but I think I like didn't not know it. Yeah. Like you saying it, I wasn't like, what? It was like, okay, yeah, this is right.
Yeah, it's interesting. I also wasn't aware. As a kid, I think as a kid watching these shows and having a bit of like queer identity and seeing it as an adult, I think you were just drawn to the things that you are attracted to, and then realizing that the people who actually were you were either like the villains or like the asshole, like bosses or like the snarky men who everyone hated. Yeah. And you're like, that's me. Now.
Yeah.
No.
Like, I love Cobra Commander to this day for like that exact reason. Cobra Commander is just one of my all-time divas.
Mateo Lane has this really funny bit of like, all Disney villains are gay men.
Yeah.
And he does Jafar, and it's like, it's so funny, but it's like so accurate. And then the female villains are like the icons that gay men love, like Maleficent is like, that's our goddess. We're like, yes, slay bitch, you know what I mean? It's interesting.
Vilified. I think Ursula just is a gay man.
Ursula's a drag queen.
Like, yeah,
that's just 1,000%.
That, yes. 100.
So let's get into the episode.
Love
it. Into it.
This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the I Dream of Jeannie episode, How to Marry an Astronaut. It is the 10th episode of season 4 and was written by James Henderson and directed by Hal Cooper. Here's how Crackle describes the episode. Jeannie's sister provides lessons in catching a husband, her quarry, Roger. Jackie and Mike, how accurate is that description?
It's technically accurate, but technically, we all know that Jeannie's sister, she always has an ulterior motive.
Oh, yeah.
She's very, very sneaky. Very, very sneaky.
Very wily she is. So the episode opens with Jeannie is in her bottle reading Bride's magazine. And I just wrote down that the interior of Jeannie's bottle is just, gorgeous.
Well, it's first of all, like, the inspiration for my entire life. And second of all, don't this break anyone's hearts was going to be the interior of my drag on booth.
Oh, no. COVID.
I know. Well, there's maybe whenever it comes back, we'll make it happen again.
Yeah, Jeannie is timeless.
You know, now they have they have photographs of that set and how like they really built it to be more circular than it probably needed to be. Yeah. I was like, they really made this like I just thought it was a background on pillows. No, they actually built a cylindrical a place for her to sit with tufted pillows and everything. Good for her. She looks amazing.
I also love that the props within the bottle are like almost look like looks like you're, you know, a drag queen, like, put together, like, a maxi challenge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very much like the bed and breakfast challenge.
Exactly. It's like there's, you know, that little, the thing that they use to, like, the viewfinder, I guess, is what we're looking through.
That thing.
It's like bedazzled in a way that really is, like, It's like, we have these jewels from morejewels.com. And they, and it was like quickly being like, deek, 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 deek. And then it's like, okay, it looks gay. Let's put it in, you know?
That's the whole
it's
thing.
It's very that. It's very, yeah. It's very like the gay, whoever the gay set decorator was really, really, really did a nice job on this.
Yes.
So Jeannie's sister pops in and Jackie requested a Jeannie's sister episode and like, good call because.
Good call.
Usually what happens on a show like this is the lead actor at season 5, 6, 7 is like, I am sick of playing this character. Give me a twin. Give me a cousin. Mm-hmm. Give me something. Episode on Taxi when Andy Kaufman all of a sudden has like multiple personalities. But I think that Jeannie's sister was in like season 2. Like they didn't waste time like letting Barbara stretch her wings and ooh, she flies.
Or should have. I think I've read in a couple interviews that said she always relished playing this part and you can see. Loves that she does a totally different voice. She has a little bit of a mid-Atlantic accent, you know, she talks yeah. totally differently. Like it's yeah. incredible. You can tell she's having the time of her life. Like she seems almost annoyed when she has to go back to playing our beloved Jeannie.
Yeah.
And I love that no one was creative enough to think of a name for Jeannie's sister. Her name is simply Jeannie.
Yeah. If you read like the Wikipedia summaries, they just have to call her Jeannie too.
Right.
Imagine like, if it was like, yeah, it'd be like Mary-Kate and Mary-Kate Olsen.
Yeah, I
guess. So exactly. That's like the real life versions.
Exactly. Yeah. They were just like, yep, yeah, she's a Jeannie. We're all Jeannies. So she's Jeannie. Also Jeannie. Just Jeannie.
So she finally like pops. Oh, yeah, go for it.
I was just going to say, like, I think you can tell that she almost enjoys playing her more than Jeannie because there's the way she hits the word darling. It makes every fiber in my gay body just like light the fuck up because I literally feel like I'm watching Paris is Burning. It's just like, it's almost like, you look terrible, darling. Like,
yeah,
the
yeah.
range of darling is amazing.
I love, so like when Jeannie pops into Jeannie's bottle, they start talking back and forth about marriage. Just watch. So first of all, the like split screen acting with her self work is immaculate because it wasn't until the second scene of them together that I realized, oh, wait a second. That's the same. That's a like an Orphan Black moment happening. She's great acting with herself.
Yeah. You definitely, it's very easy and quick to suspend because Barbara A creates two very distinct characters and the way they shot it is beautiful. I mean, mm-hmm. better than would say The Parent Trap or any other of those kinds of movies from the 60s. I think it actually looks believable. Like if mm-hmm. I think probably as a kid, probably didn't even know it was the same actress, you know,
yeah.
I was, you know, just 6 and 11, loving it. well done. Well done. Photography.
Yeah, it was really well done. And I think that stuff is really hard to do, those like reactions to the conversations, but she's so good at it. It's so fun to watch someone inhabit two totally different people in the same conversation. It's a vibe.
Yeah. And this, during this moment is where I wrote down in my notes, Jeannie is drag though. Like,
yes.
Jeannie fully drag.
Yeah.
And I, you know, as some of your listeners know, I was very inspired by not just I Dream of Jeannie, but by this evil Jeannie character so much that I wrote a sequel to my own show, I Dream of Jackie, called I Dream of Jackie 2, where I, my own evil twin. Let me tell you, much like Barbara, it's way more fun to play the villain. I live for it. Brett, I'm gonna send you some of the footage from it, but do it with me on stage too, but it is so much fun to be that evil character, to add that wahahaha to it, you know. And I think it's you can tell she's living, and it is drag, honey. It's like Paris is Burning. It's the queen. It is all of those
yeah.
like amazing yes. things that feed into what culture is now are all from this type of performance that Barbara Eden giving as evil Jeannie. I'll
yeah.
call her that.
It's
I will
like,
call her Jeannie too.
Costume, hair.
Get really creative with it.
It's just like everything about it is, you know, when basics are like, well, you know, cis women can't do drag. It's like, look at Barbara Eden doing either of these roles. And it's like, she is taking, you know, feminine traits and they are just heightened into such a
oh, yeah.
ridiculous degree.
Completely.
There's like a, there's like a limp. There's like her body language changes too. Like there's like a limpness to her wrist. She gives like very less fucks than Genie One, I guess we'll say. And it's like, she just maniacally loves what she's saying and loves that she's about to like destroy Genie's opportunity to ever, you know, get married. But I also will say, I kept thinking evil Genie was like, I just can like, I can picture RuPaul watching this and being like, that's an inner saboteur. If I ever saw
right.
Sorry, that was my RuPaul. It was so bad, but like, just, you know, think about it.
Save it for Snatch Game. No. So like, no, I like that. So basically like Genie just, of course, wants to get married to Major Nelson. That's her whole gig. And then Genie 2 is like, no man gets married of his own free will. I've been married 4 to 7 times. Watch me get a man. And then I like, so then Rod, she's like, who? And then Roger just like, Major Nelson's door is never locked. Literally, everyone just barges in. He is fully not at home. And that door is unlocked. Roger just comes right in. and Genie 2 is like, he'll do. And then there's this zoom in shocked look on like, on Genie's face of like, what? Yes. It's great. I love that.
Yeah.
And then cut to credits. Oh, my God. Yeah, opening bends.
The opening credits are just so iconic. And I love them. I'm honestly, that also is why Little Gays probably watched it, too. I would say.
Oh, I think that's probably another difference between Bewitched and I Dream of Genie is I Dream of Genie. Uh-huh. It started like only a year later, but it just feels a little groovier than Bewitched. Yeah. And that kind of a lot of that's from the musicalization of the theme, which plays throughout the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it happens in this episode as much, but often whenever Evil Genie is on screen, you get the
yes.
Yes.
Whenever she comes on screen, you know, so there's that kind of like jazzy groove is to I Dream of Genie, which you don't find as much in Bewitched, but certainly in this theme song, I think encapsulates what makes, because 60s, you know, though we think of them as an era, were really a transition from the 50s to the very groovy 70s. And you kind of see as the 60s go on, we move less and less away from Leave It to Beaver and more towards what this starts becoming, a little groovy, a little funky.
Brady Bunch.
Totally. Partridge Family. It gets a little more colorful, certainly. And I think I think it's a little sexier. So I think it's a sexier theme song.
Totally. Yeah, I think Bewitched was definitely felt like a more sterile version of I Dream of Genie. And I also wonder, like, I like to think of what the conversations would have been like in like the executives' rooms of like, we'd love to have, you know, Barbara Eden be a sexy character. What if she was showing her midriff and they're like, that's too far? And they're like, not if she's a genie.
Sure.
like, okay, I'm with you. But it does feel like sexy in a way that was fresh, I think, for the time.
Yeah, I mean, she couldn't show her a belly button. All she did was blink. So that leads me to, do y'all remember the Nick at Night commercial that was a parody of Suzanne Vega's Tom's Diner to Genie's Diner?
Oh, I know every word, Brett.
Oh, yeah. I am sitting on the sofa. There's a TV in the corner. I am watching Major Nelson.
It's like, it's kind of like Bewitched.
Yeah. Da, 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 da. It's great. Those, I will sometimes, I haven't done this in a while, but I will go down to a YouTube rabbit hole of watching old Nick at Night commercials, and they are so funny and fresh and like, there's one I remember that was called The Pants That Ate Fred Mertz. And it was just about how Fred Mertz on Lucy, his pants were just like so high up and we just keep getting higher.
Oh my God, the shade. Okay, we need to go. Look, between our three powers combined, we need to go. We need to find out who was the gay person in charge of all of this in the 90s when we were a bit younger, but like, they still have to be with us, and we need to go find them and thank them.
That's true.
That advertising
they were looking out
lived.
For us for sure.
I remember all of those commercials, and I love them. So then we get the episode, proper. I don't know. Is this when we cut to NASA?
And this is where I always felt the show would get like turn into something else whenever we cut to those NASA scenes, because it's like also you get these like beautiful shots of this like office or whatever, this NASA complex, and all of a sudden you're like in the office with them. You see like Major Nelson working on some very serious math equations.
What?
Where
what?
You're
yeah.
like, what is this?
Also,
we don't care about this.
What? what math equation was that? It looked like he had a ruler and yeah, he was like putting it up to like a math and like, he's like numbers are hard.
Yeah, like, I will say it was hard for me to concentrate because his shirt sleeves were rolled up and you could see his forearms, and Larry Hagman forearms are very good. He's a very handsome man.
Very sexy.
I will say back in the day Larry Hagman could definitely get it, but think about this for a second. I love that the three of us are questioning the believability of this scene, but the earlier scene with Jeannie and her twin
yeah,
model.
Yeah, makes sense.
Oh, no.
Totally real. Totally real.
Once you step into that world of mysticism and magic, I was like, I'm like, anything is fine by me.
If Tony had been doing that in the bottle, fine.
Sure. I would have believed it. I would have believed it.
So this is when Dr. Bellows comes in, and I love Dr. Bellows so much, obviously. And I also love, I mean, Dr. Bellows is gay canon. I watched the Hawaii episodes. I saw his floral print short romper open down to his navel.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great.
I'd love a visual of that.
It's a great shot.
It's on Brett's Twitter. Yeah. I definitely retweeted it because I was very excited to see it.
I love any time that like sitcoms of the 60s go to the beach because it's like, oh my God, what are they going to be wearing? It's like the men are going to be wearing like Speedos or short shorts, or in this case, like in that episode, like Major Healy is wearing like a pajama set in a way on the beach. It's like shorts and it's like a matching top. It's
yeah, very, very gay, the episodes where they go to Hawaii. Yes, that's the photo. Yes, Mike found it very quickly. So if you would like to find it, look at our Twitter.
The hat is like a dangly necklace.
It's a romp him, right?
Yeah, it's a romp.
It is a romp him. It is a romp him, R.I.P. Wait.
R.I.P, really.
But let's go back to the gay moment when Dr. Bellows enters, because the last thing he hears, and he doesn't, I think based on the angle of his entrance, he just hears Major Healy say the pussycat, and then he walks in, and then moment, and I think this is what Rourke was saying, was the question of, did Major Healy say that to Major Nelson? Did I walk in on something? Is there something, who's calling who pussycat? I could see the moment in his acting choice of maybe I'm walking in on something. Maybe this explains Major Nelson's been terrifying the last years. Maybe they've been gay lovers this whole time.
There's a lot of gay like story undertones within the show, especially with the friendship and like the secrecy. It's like they're very chummy. They keep bumping into each other. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is their relationship? They're both not married, which also for the time was kind of bizarre, right? These like eligible bachelors and their like
there
30s was weird.
The, like standards and practices of the 60s when the show started, they were very uncomfortable about a bachelor living with a single genie. And so they were like, the smoke can never be shown going under his bedroom door, and if it is, you have to show the smoke coming back out. Like it was a specific note. Like
or like the, at the end of the night, that couldn't be like the last shot of the episode.
Had to be like, she comes out, they're not in the same room, she's in her bottle. I also love Bellows is such a busybody, and he's just like, you know what, Roger Healy should be married because that'll take his mind off girls and make him focus on his work more. And what I realize in watching this is like Bellows is the Gladys Kravitz of this show, but they're like their status is completely flipped, which I think is what makes Bellows a beloved, fun character and makes Gladys like it's just sad.
Like, oh, we love Mrs. Kravitz.
I love Mrs. Kravitz, but it's just like literally no one believes her. She has no status like
making, in the neighborhood.
Yeah,
her husband doesn't believe her. I'm with you.
But like Bellows is like, they're still intimidated by him. And so it makes that character work. And even though he's there to be like in the improv scene, like, no, no, no. Him having status makes him like, no, but yes. Like it keeps the thing going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny to take it back to that improv place, because it's like, you know, you have all of these characters have clear wants just in this one scene. You know, Dr. Bellows wants these two men, right? Because he's their boss. He wants them to do well. They keep disappointing him. They keep being these shenanigans that he can't explain. You know, so he sees, you know, Major Nelson hard at work on this very important equation with this very large ruler. Unclear how that works. And then, you know, to see Major Healy goofing off and calling someone pussycat on the phone.
Trying to get dates at work, which I'm just like, Major Healy, you've got to calm down, dude. Like, that's
HR. And the true shade that the minute Major Healy leaves, Major Nelson doesn't even keep up the charade. He's like, yeah, he was talking to a girl.
Yeah, throws him right under the bus.
Doesn't give a shit. They're not.
He doesn't care.
The BFFness only goes one way. So this is where
I also will say, wait, one more thing about the scene, and I think all the scenes in general, is like watching it as an adult. I had one of those moments where you're like, oh, I see it now. It is. It's like really good sketch comedy.
Uh-huh.
Like there are jokes that are hit, like the whole joke of like he can't figure out the numbers because he hears other numbers for some equation that we're supposed to like understand, I guess, or maybe not. But he's like 7, 5. The scene opens with them finishing the equation and then the phone call, and he's like he can't get it, and it buttons. The end of the scene is like he also can't get out because of the numbers. And I don't know, I watched it and I was like, that's cool. This is like sketch comedy. Mm-hmm. And I loved it and found it funny as a kid, not even knowing what I was watching. You know?
It's so true. And I think it's what's also, it is, talk about the technology, right? The Major Healy has to call the receptionist, give her the number to connect her to the girl.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that like these happen anymore, but like all of them still relate to like, how many times have you like tried to give your Wi-Fi password to someone and you're like, wait, was it 1, 2, 4, 6? Yeah. Dang it.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to start all over again.
Yeah. Start again. Yeah.
So speaking of technology, we didn't cut back to the bottle because, so Genie 2 was like, I'm marrying Roger. What's he doing right now? And they like, unload this weird, like, spy camera pink thing with a bunch of, like, rhinestones glued on it, which is the thing they use multiple times because I watched an episode in season 5 that also had one of these machines.
These machines were very popular in Genie bottles. I will just, that's the canon.
Oh, yeah, it was, anytime you're in a Genie bottle, you will see one of these machines. Yeah. I promise you.
I'll keep that in mind when I'm out of quarantine and back. Hitting up all the Genie bottles again. Jesus. So this is where they spy Roger just trying to hook up at work, which is like, dude, I'm sure the HR file on him is very... Well, no, it's the 60s. He got away with all of it. No one cared. Like,
No one cared? No one cared. You could just hit on any female worker. It didn't matter.
Didn't matter. Nope.
Yeah.
But then they blink him to a generic... it's not Major Nelson's backyard. It's just like a Garden of Eden, like, idyllic backyard sitch.
It was a cut set from The Sound of Music, and they were like, we actually don't need this anymore. 1617 is happening, like, somewhere else. And they were like, well, what are we going to do with the swing? Well, give it to I Dream of Jeannie. Like,
if it's gay enough, they'll take it.
Yeah, they're like, oh, and I think we have some, like, leftover costumes from Paula or Music Man. We can throw Bob Reed in one of these. Yeah. It'll look great.
Yeah, so, like, Bad Jeannie...
It'll make sense.
...is wearing some, like, yeah, God, what is the...
She looks like Truly Scrumptious from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yes,
right?
She's swinging. She gets like Roger appears on her lap, and I like that he's like, "Let me down from the swing," and it's like, "You could just get off. Like you're not that high up." And so this is lesson one. Lesson one is teleport your man to a backyard and get him on a swing. I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's how to get a guy to marry you. Yeah. And also the technology is so funny because like this scene was the OG Vine with those like kind of shitty edits where it's like, and now she's off of the thing and she's back on. It was like,
I love that. Well, cool. Okay. So like, you know, it's the in-camera trick of like they hit stop. They change the, you know, someone disappears, someone comes in, they move a thing, and
apparently
they hit recording.
Very hard to explain to people.
Yeah, that was a weird moment. That was some manufactured gooper and gaggery right there. That was, I don't know.
On a moving swing, though, it's very complicated.
I was going to say, this a moving swing.
If it's moving, you have to get it in the right spot. It's hard. They were really stretching themselves.
Uh-huh. Season four,
from a production value.
Mm-hmm. True. Mike, you were just referencing Vine, but the kids are using the TikTok these days. And I will tell
the
you,
kids,
as someone who has attempted a transition on TikTok, a moving transition can be very difficult. Mm-hmm. And the editors pulled it off.
They pulled it off. They did wonders. They would do great on TikTok today.
Oh, God.
You to find them and get them
I
in
Dream
the
of Genie reboot on TikTok.
Wait, that's a genius idea.
That's the first TikTok original idea, Brett.
So I didn't
just
like. So then,
you just do the episodes with literal, like you script it out and have actors do it. Honestly, okay.
Write it down. Write it down.
I got it.
Copyright. We did it here. So then when Genie tries, she ends up accidentally. Major Nelson comes home. She tries. She like blinks him to the Garden of Eden, whatever it is. She kicks him in the face. And I noticed when the camera is showing is from down below and it's showing her face when she's kicking him in the face, you can fully see the ceiling of the studio and the top of the backdrop.
Mm-hmm. Wait, the first thing I noticed her. I was like, well, at least she's a sensible girl wearing tights. That's what I noticed as a drag queen. Because you know what? They always say if your shoes are off, you better have a lovely manicure, pedicure, whatever. No, just a tight. Just a simple new tight. She was wearing a tight. And also, here's the thing. So, right, this episode is setting us up that, like, evil genie is tricking her sister by giving her these terrible ideas that she's going to ruin. But, like, it actually isn't that bad of an idea to get your, you know, romantic interest on a lovely swing with beautiful flowers. I'm going to say evil genie wasn't that evil in this moment. This was all on good genie, who just is clumsy.
Just like clocked him in the face. I did like that weird, it was almost like a horror shot of Major Nelson with the shoe in his mouth and then like genie's feet are like swinging over him. It was very intense. So then we get
That was definitely a horror like shot.
Yeah.
I think that's what I found interesting too about, like, I guess the comedy of it. It was like shot like sketches. I mean, they are all like kind of self-contained sketches. And it just was, kind of like, it was interesting. The shots of like boom, reaction shot, and then down for the shoe in the foot. And it was like, I kind of appreciated it. I was like, this is cool.
The show was edited. Like, they did the work on this to construct jokes, which a lot of the shows that were, because, like, all these were shot single cam. There was no studio audience. They put in the canned laughter. And so, like, the shows like Dick Van Dyke Show and I Love Lucy that were shot in front of a live audience, they couldn't really do those, like, quick cut, inset things because you're trying to capture that, like, live energy. But then a lot of the other shows, like Bewitched, doesn't really have manic editing like this. It still is trying to kind of trick you into thinking there might be an audience there. Like when you're a kid, like there might be. But like Genie is kind of fully a single cam. Like the vibe is single cam, the editing and the pacing.
Yeah, we see the scenes from multiple angles.
TikTok. Yeah.
Totally. And I think especially in Major Nelson's home, I think we do see a lot of the scenes from multiple angles.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think, you know, I think they were too lazy to build out the whole NASA set, but it's in Major Nelson's home. It feels like there's four walls most of the time.
So lesson number two, she's like, you need to do little things for your man. And then she like, Genie 2 blinks into Roger's office? And she like pops one of his buttons off.
Yeah. And then she proceeds to hand sew it back on, which I thought was just, I think there's a little something subversive here, right? Which is that, like, it's kind of subversive to say that, like make fun of the fact that this is something that people would have perceived as something valuable in a woman, that she could fix her man's clothes, darn his socks or whatever. Yeah. And I think the writer kind of making fun of that trope a little bit with this moment, because it's like, oh, well, it's ridiculous. Like, this is obviously not real. She obviously is just doing this as a, which is, I think, a little bit subversive in that way, because it's it kind of reminds the viewer, like, oh, these are silly things. Yeah. Like, these are not how you should measure a woman's love. It should not be whether she sews buttons on, you know.
I totally agree with you. And I think one of my favorite parts that also did the same thing was the way she referred to the meal. He was like, you cooked it? And she was like, I did with my little hands. She said, like, little hands or my dainty hands.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, you did this all by yourself? And it's like, I do think it was poking fun at this, like, you know, this like kind of backwards idea that women are more valuable or better wives if they can like take their dainty hands and make a lovely dinner back in the day. And I think that's cool that it had a sense of humor to be like, this is dumb. And then you make him eat cardboard and he loves the cardboard.
This scene has a moment that regular listeners of the podcast are going to groan about, but Roger Healy is wearing a neckerchief and I live. I was wearing a neckerchief earlier today and I took it off because
looks
of this
so good.
But you know, I was interviewing Asia O'Hara and Evie Oddly for the Vegas Drag Race show, so it's like, well, every time I interview drag queens and I know they're going to be in drag, I'm like, I have to do something. when I had an office job, I would like put on my full suit, like I would go in just to be like, I know y'all put in effort, I'm gonna put in Something.
So, and that's why I look like this.
Yeah.
Oh my god. What you don't see is Mike Elton over here is camouflaged in his new Ange Devro office, where he has worn a green shirt and is hiding on his green wall. But I will say, it does make the lovely red of your hair
pop.
Oh,
pop.
Thank you, Jackie. And that's really the only reason I dress like this today. So good.
Let that hair pop.
Yeah. So, hair pop.
Roger is wearing a neckerchief. It is the first of a couple of very gay outfits he'd be wearing in this episode. Just wait for that tux. Mm-hmm. I love it. They feed the shredded cardboard. I wrote that it looked like green Fritos or like green, like the kind of Fritos you get in the burritos at Taco Bell, but green instead of red.
I thought at first it was going to be she just like fed him like spinach pasta, but like didn't bother to cook it. And so he had to like pretend he was loving it. I thought that's where the joke was going.
Like zoodles. They look kind of like zoodles or something.
Yeah. I thought the joke was going to be like, oh, but you think I'm so sexy that you'll eat pasta that I've been cooked. Ha ha ha. But like, then it was, no, it's cardboard. Yeah.
And it crunches.
Funnier.
And so that was the kind of thing where the prop guy on set had spent way too much time on that bedazzled viewfinder in the genie bottle. And he was like, well, I forgot to do the cardboard thing, but here's dry fettuccine. Like,
sure.
Yeah. They won't know the difference. Yeah.
So then genie.
I was going to say, or is it like, I started wondering like, was cardboard thinner in the 60s? Is there something I don't know about the paper process?
Or like, did they call construction paper cardboard back then? Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. It's interesting. And we should definitely spend at least 10 more minutes talking about that.
What is... Untangle it. Untangle this shredded cardboard above it. this is when Jeannie then serves shredded cardboard to Tony. And he's not living. He doesn't want this. She's like, whatever. Yeah. And then at this, I'll go for it because my have a
story. Okay. No, I need to know, Jackie. Yeah.
I have a question. And this is a question, and I don't know if it's left unanswered or maybe I missed it. Is it implied that Major Healy is under a spell and thinks that the cardboard tastes good? Or is it that he would say anything tastes good as long as it comes from sexy genie? You know, this is a dangling moment I wonder if it's left ambiguous for the audience.
This ties into my next note that I just wrote down. I wasn't sure why I wrote it down, but I wrote, Roger is just a horny basic bitch, heart, and a heart emoji. I think he's just a horny basic bitch and just is like, just what's like, I'll eat the shredded cardboard. You want to marry me? Let's do this. I want it. I want it that like.
But I also feel like we're missing the tying or the sewing of the button. I feel like was the 1-2 punch with this trick. It was like, if you pop the button and trick him and then sew it, then he will actually enjoy food that you also made that is disgusting. And so like, I'm confused because Jeannie never did the button thing. She only did the cardboard. And it feels like, to me, feels like, story-wise, a mistake. I'm going to say it.
Okay, I'm going to find the original shooting script and see if there was a genie sewing moment. Because,
you
know, the editors might have goofed on this.
I mean, there's an opportunity she could have mistakenly popped off his pants button. We could have really played that up.
Hey, what is that? Is that a Pussycat doll song, Buttons?
Is it Loosen at My Buttons? It's a Pussycat doll song, bro.
Just re-edit this genie episode. See, this is every single year on Snatch Game, I'm always like, yes, Paul Lind. Like, oh, like, I was like, yes, Joanne Worley. Wait, who the fuck is Silky playing? Like, that is my thing every Snatch Game, is I have no idea who the Bravo celebrities are. But if you do, Lil Edie, I'm like, I know this. This is my jam.
So, I'm honestly more along the lines of knowing the Bravo celebrities, and sometimes I'm like, who is that? So, like, when, you know, you did Lisa Rinna, which was iconic.
Uh-huh.
Oh, thanks. Yes.
It was so good. Like, in this house, we went wild. Oh, we were wild. Anyway, sorry, a tangent, but had to say it.
But getting a good Snatch Game in is it's hard work.
It is. When we go off the air, I'll tell you my idea if I ever went back, what it would be. But I'll keep it for off air.
Yeah.
So that'll leave a kid dangling.
Don't slide into my DMs asking, because you'll never know.
It's Agnes Moorehead.
Oh God! Why not? Someone should. Okay, but this then.
Or it's Mike Kelton's version impression of RuPaul.
Yeah,
going, that's the interceptor.
So this is the moment where there's a shot like we were talking about earlier, how they take different shots. There's a shot where I think it's Evil Genie is on, like standing up, looking down at Tony and Genie, who are seated, and you can see like behind them. And they remodeled Major Nelson's apartment for season 4 because he has this really groovy, like, see-through shelving unit and a little, like, banquette, like, in front of it, to, like, a seating nook like area to read. And I was like,
this... Like a Lucite belt bookshelf?
Well, it was, like, wood, but it was, like, a whole bunch of, like, squares, so you could, like, see...
Oh, okay. Call those, like, an étage? Is that what those are called?
Oh.
I think that's called an étage.
Yeah, but I was like, I'm living for this apartment layout, because his apartment layout does change fairly frequently. Like,
well, Brett, he's a bachelor.
Yeah,
that's
he's always
thing. I think
shifting
I think
things around.
You know, that's one of the one of the differences between this show and Bewitched is, you know, Samantha is constantly trying to be this homemaker, and Jeannie isn't even there yet. She's just trying to get the man
nonstop. Yeah. And if she sends him to Siberia or whatnot, you know, she does it. Who cares? She's
wait,
got power.
Can we talk about the gorgeous lighting as Barbara Eden comes into the table with the bowl of cardboard, and she gets that glamour light across her eyes? Mm-hmm. Mwah, chef's kiss. Chef's kiss.
The camera loves her, and I love her twice as much in this episode.
Yeah, sure. She's stunning. She's iconic.
So Roger is like, he busts in. He's getting married. He's wearing a double-breasted suit. And again, I'm living. I love me some double-breasted shit. And then... This is the scene.
Okay, calm down, sweetie.
Take it down, sweetie.
The
next scene is when Tony is trying to talk Roger out of getting married, and this is Tony's upstairs studio redressed to look like a restaurant. And
look at this.
When they were up there, I was like, is that his studio? And I was like, no, it's a restaurant. And then I went on the IMDb trivia, which you know is always right. And they said that
gosh.
It was. So I don't know. He's trying to talk Roger out of getting married, and Roger's like, "No, I want this."
Well, and I think you know, Roger's also pointing out something very clear, which is like, Tony, you've been an idiot this whole time. You've had this amazing woman in your house for at least 3 or 4 years, and you have sealed the deal. Now I have the opportunity, and I'm not going to make the same mistake as you, buddy. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm with Major Healy on this. Why shouldn't he marry an amazing woman who amazing things? Why not?
Yeah, give
he doesn't
him a,
know that she's nefarious.
A Rolls Royce. Mm-hmm. Well, I did like that. So then now Tony's like, so you remember when she like did X, Y, and Z to you? And I looked at it, I'm like, those are all things that have happened in previous episodes.
Right.
Which mm-hmm. Genie, actually, you got to give it respect for. It has a tight continuity. For a 60s sitcom, it has plot lines, like the whole Genie's mm-hmm. birthday plot line. There's like 5 episodes where the running thing is, when is Genie's birthday? They're trying to find out Genie's birthday, and like, it'll be the focus of an episode, it'll be a runner in the next episode, and it's like, sitcoms in the 60s didn't do that. They counted on you to tune in, tune out at your leisure, but Genie was like, the gays are tuning in every week for this.
The gays are tuning in. It's smarter.
And I wonder too, because I've read in a couple of interviews that Barbara Eden always felt like one of the mistakes of the show was that they got married, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it took away the kind of cat and mouse of the mm-hmm. series. But I think what's interesting is if we think of the show maybe in a little bit more modern terms, I wonder if that also made the show less syndicatable, right? Because there's the pre-marriage, mm-hmm. post-marriage episodes.
Yeah.
And so I wonder too, you know, if, you know, as we exit the time of the 50s and move into the 60s and 70s and then today, where things are very bingeable, if you will, mm-hmm. I wonder how much of this was writers playing with these ideas, or how much of this was just, you know, cereal box guess Genie's birthday games that lasted a whole season. Like, we'll never know, but but I'm curious, you know, in the 60s, as they were really experimenting with the medium of television, if these were attempts to make a show longer, to feel more like a series rather than just episodic.
Interesting.
And to do that with I Dream of Genie, which, like, you know, critics did not like it at the time, and like, they didn't give it its respect, and I think it is commendable that they must have essentially had like a show bible Because, like, there was no Google. They could not go to the I Dream of Jeannie Wikipedia, like, episode list and be like, what has Jeannie 2 done to Roger before? Like, there had to have been some sort of... Unless this writer also wrote all those episodes, which, I don't know, could have been. I haven't...
No, but I think
It is one person, though, right? I found that interesting.
Sidney Sheldon wrote, almost every episode for the first, 2 or 3 years. And he also had a bunch of pseudonyms that he wrote under, apparently. So, even if you're watching the first 2 seasons and it's a different writer, it might have been one of his aliases.
That's interesting. Yeah.
That's almost bizarro. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, do you think he was like, is this going to be a bad episode? Like, I'll just call me something else for this one.
No faith in this one. So now Roger's like, I'm definitely getting married. I'm going to live luxury with a genie wife. It's going to be awesome. He is now getting fitted for his tuxedo, which is another full moment that I am here and I want this Liberace tuxedo, mm-hmm. purple green. I think it's like the double sided sequin that like changes when you move it, which I honestly thought was a recent invention.
Okay, this is one of the gayest moments of life. I think the fact that, you know, we've already kind of identified Evil Genie as kind of a coded queer character, at least a coded drag queen, right? You know, and then the fact that this is what she chooses for her spouse, which is a double sequin blazer.
Purple and green. Ugh.
And then when he asks whether if it was right for a wedding, she says, "Well, I could put more sequins on it."
Yes, yes, funny. That was so funny. I was like, "Yes, it was good."
The frilly shirt, the bow tie. I'm just like, I want that look.
It was, and then remember the cake topper,
the
life size cake topper.
And he was like, oh, this is the cake, thinking like it's just a life-size cake that just looks like the cake topper. And she goes, oh, no, this is the cake topper. And he's like, oh, my God, so the cake must be even bigger. And he was like, cool, I love it. In a way, seeing them interact, I was like, they are a really good match. Like,
yeah, where's their show?
They get each other. They would be a longly married, happy couple. So She fucked it up.
Yeah. Well, okay, to take this for a quick second to the Bravo world, it's Erica Jane and Tom Girardi.
1000%, Jackie. And Brett, if you don't know the reference, you got Erica Jane is, she's iconic. And it's their relationship is, you see it from the outside and you're like, no way. And then you get inside and you go, oh, it's perfect. They're perfect together.
Very perfect together. Very perfect together.
And yeah, they would be perfect together, but Jeannie, too, she's too bad to the bone. She can't. I like that. So when Major Nelson is like complaining to Jeannie and he's just like, oh, I can't believe we have to stop them. And then Jeannie is like, I'm sorry you feel that way about an astronaut marrying a genie. And it's like, ooh, cut him. Like mm-hmm. she like.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I think that's something, too, that, Jeannie always resets at the beginning of every episode, and she's always optimistic. Mm. And I think one of the benefits of having Evil Jeannie on the show is it does help Barbara push her protagonist character to be a little more wise, even though at the beginning of every episode, Jeannie's like, yes, my sister's here. This would be great. But this is, I think, the fourth or fifth appearance of her sister. Yeah. And at this point, she's like, wait a minute, something's up. But then not only that, having the perspective of what her sister's doing, I think always does give her that like impetus to be like, wait a minute, I'm amazing. Why aren't you marrying me? You idiot. You idiot.
She gets so mad at that comment that she like blinks herself into the bottle. She then blinks like a padlock and a cage around it. She means business.
Okay. And that's one of the things that I will say, they play very fast and loose in the I Dream of Jeannie canon with like, when Jeannie is trapped or not, like, is it when the lid's on the bottle, she blinks a cage over herself, but like normally when someone puts her in a thing, she's trapped forever. We'll never get to the bottom of the
safe
science
episode where she's trapped in a safe for like 5 episodes or something.
Right.
Like, what is this? Was Barbara Eden? Did she have to go do a movie at that week or like,
right. They had to film all of her scenes.
It's a full like 4-part, like feature length eleganza of just her trapped in a safe with some giant pencils and stuff.
Right. But she can like blink like a cage over her bottle. Yeah, that's also
like,
sealed.
How can you get out of this? So then, Bella
also,
was fine.
It insinuated, sorry, I'm oh, just, no. This cage thing is crazy because it insinuates that like, he can't like shake her out, I guess. Like the cage doesn't really, I don't know who it really protects, right? It feels like it would be like entrapping herself.
I think it's like slamming the door and not locking it. It's more like a statement. She's like, oh God, I just hit my shelf.
You were really in the moment.
Oh no, Star Wars figures. Oh no. So then we cut back to, is this back at now? Like Bellows is now telling Tony that like, he's like, yeah, this Major Healy's getting married at our place in our backyard. And it's like, I love how he's just on board. Amanda's excited.
Also, forget the, like, 80 foot tall wedding cake, because clearly that plan is out the window. Yeah. Like, now you're getting married at the Bellows.
Yeah. And there's, like, four people there, and three of them have swords that they raise on up, and I was like, what is going on here? It looks like, honestly, it looks like a COVID wedding.
Oh my god.
Everyone's put there by a Zoom. So this is where we get a little bit of Amanda Bellows, and I do like Amanda Bellows a lot, because she's just kind of like, I don't know, a messy bitch that's there for drama in a way. Mm-hmm. A lot of her plots are like, she's just like Bellows in that she wants to find out what's going on, and she's way more unapologetic about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say this was actually, you know, people deride the Once They're Married episodes, but I did love that once they were married and Amanda could be friends with Jeannie, that like that little bit of like cast of like, well, you're a young wife and like we're friends, but like always that little bit of frenemiesness in Amanda Bellows, which I love in the later, I think it was just the next season was the only season they were married, but kind of in that fifth season when you got that little bit of cattiness between Amanda and Jeannie, I thought was fun. And I loved the way that she played that, like always subtext and never as like an overt kind of thing. And I think it's always fun that, you know, the Bellowses are foils for each other a little bit, and certainly in this episode. But
speaking of gay men and their beards, I don't know. Feels a little bit
ding, ding, ding.
Like that. Because, I mean, like, they have no, like, marital chemistry. They have great chemistry together, like, in terms of just, like, in terms of, like, a straight woman and her gay older best friend. Like, that's. That's the vibe.
it's like the book and the music of a musical is like, that's the pair, you know?
Yeah. It feels like that, the fact that Amanda Bellows is just like crying through this wedding. That's like very unemotional. She has like no emotional attachment to either of these people, but all of a sudden she's just like, I don't leave me alone. I'm crying my mascara. Like she makes it all about her. What a diva.
I love her.
Love her.
And listeners of the pod, you'll recognize Emmeline Henry, who plays Amanda Bellows, from I'm Dickens, He's Finster. Listen, it's a one-season wonder from, like, 1963 that John Astin was in before Adam's Family, and we talked about it in an episode, and it's surprisingly really good, but it's lost to history, and she's in it, and she's good. Weird tangents I go on. Then we get to see the dresses that Jeannie and Jeannie 2 are wearing, and they are both like these mod perfection. I love both of their looks.
I love their looks. I love the like this is what I was talking about earlier, the grooviness of the comes the bride as evil Jeannie is walking down the aisle with this, you know, helmet of brown hair and this little hat. It's very forward, right? You think compared to, we think of Samantha, long, pretty blonde hair. You know, it feels, Samantha feels very much anchored in the early 60s. And this is where we're pushing into the later 60s, where a woman is groovy. She doesn't have to wear long dresses for her wedding.
Her wedding dress is a mini skirt, like a white lace mini skirt. Like, it's great.
It reminded me, like, I think a lot of your aesthetic, tell me if I'm wrong, but is kind of derived from this like groovy 60s mod style, and it reminded me, especially the yellow, the one that Jeannie wore, I was like, I could totally see Jackie wearing
that. I mean, that was your episode one, essentially, your like spring look, kind of, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an era where I see women taking power in their bodies and in their clothing and being loud and proud about the fact that they have legs and they have tits and they have gorgeous hair. Half of it's fake, half of it was fake in the 60s. You know, that's the thing is, women in the 60s really embraced that, like, I'm gonna create fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that necessarily it was for anyone but themselves, right? I think that these looks, right, you really, it's about the freedom of being a woman. And I love that, you know, we see that in these books in different ways, but certainly with Evil Genie being like, this is what I'm wearing to my wedding, which I'm sure
totally
for the older audience probably watching this with their kids, where I'll be like, oh, that's such a scandalous thing to wear to a wedding.
Look how evil she is.
Yeah.
It's not like she wore a dress. She didn't wear a black wedding dress like Christine on Selling Sunset season 3. I do know that.
I mean, we should talk about that too, because I'm ready to go. But
yeah,
we're back here.
God.
But I'm ready to go on Selling Sunset. I'm ready to go. Wait, Jackie, do you watch?
No, I haven't watched it yet because I'm sad that I won't be able to own any of these.
it's so far out there. It's so escapist. Absurd.
Also, like, to me, like, honestly, like the houses are I would fast forward through the house parts. It's like, just get to the conversations about what parties are going on and who is invited to the party and why you're mad that you weren't invited to the party and if you should go to the party.
Brett, that is all that Bravo is. Where have you been?
I was thinking, watching this during COVID, I'm like, oh my God, if you can't have gatherings of large people, that just completely nukes this entire genre of reality show.
It's a struggle right now.
Oh boy.
It's a struggle.
So then the wedding starts happening. There's a really funny moment where the fully ridiculous priest is like, join hands, and Roger tries to hold Tony's hand, and Tony just like slaps it away like, you idiot, what are you doing? I love that.
Well, it's obviously, you know, I think the gayness between Major Healy and Major Nelson is something throughout the series, but I just love those little moments where, you know, it is played for laughs, but it's still kind of fun and sweet.
Yeah.
Like, it's sweet that he reached for his best friend's hand.
Yeah.
It didn't make me go, oh, they're making fun of, you know,
gays. No,
it was kind of like, he just loves him. He loves Major Nelson. He probably loves Major Nelson much more than Evil Genie, you know, like, if 100%. You think about it.
Apparently, so, like, Larry Hagman and Bill Daly both hate it. So, like, you know, real talk, Larry Hagman was a bit of a nightmare to work with. He's a very lovely...
We've heard.
Yeah, he's a very lovely person, wow. But he also would, like, you know, urinate on the set when he wasn't happy, show up wearing a gorilla costume just to piss people off. He maybe chased some visiting nuns with an axe one time. You know, fun
what?
Stuff.
Are you serious?
Yeah, no, he was just so, like... it was both... He was, he wanted to be a star, and he got on the show, and he saw that it was really Genie's show, and they were writing him to be kind of like a dumb antagonist, and so he like really pushed them to like, please make me likable. And then he was causing too much friction on sets. They were like, you should go see a therapist. So they sent him to a therapist, but they sent him to like a very 60s therapist who was like, you just need to smoke pot and drink more, man. And so that just led to Larry Hagman just drinking champagne and smoking weed nonstop, which did not help the matters. But so what they would say was, towards around this time, like 3, 4, 5 on, Bill Daly and Larry Hagman, they would get bored with the scripts and they would just like, they would do a lot more physical gags and they would like work things in and like try things out physically because they knew they weren't going to be saying the funny lines usually. So they would try to do something. So I bet that this moment was probably something they just did like in the moment.
Wow.
I love if that's true. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's so cute. It's sweet. It speaks to definitely to Major Healy's character, you know, who is the sweeter one. He's the sweetest person in the whole show. I could see, and you know, and it's a little gay. I love things that are a little
gay. It's a lovely little taste of gay.
And then, so when the priest starts doing the vows, all of a sudden, blink, and then there's a switch. All of a sudden, Nelson and Healy switch places, and my jaw dropped. I don't know why I didn't see that coming. What is wrong with me? It was this weird involuntary reaction.
Well, because I think it isn't quite as overt in this episode as it is in some other ones that Evil Genie's ultimate goal is to get Major Nelson, right? That's not as overtly explicit in this episode. So I think it definitely is something that rewards longtime viewers of this show in that every episode so far we've seen Evil Genie. She's tried to steal Major Nelson. And here now all of a sudden, haha, you thought she was just trying to prove her sister? No, she was just trying to steal Mr.
Boom. Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting though, because it was a bad plan. Like
totally bad plan.
What about this makes you actually marry him? You should have at least waited till the like I do, right? And then it might have worked. But it just seems like a faulty plan. And I was like, girl, I know you're smarter than this. From the way you say darling, I was like, I know that you could do a better job here.
She did crack the priest's glasses so that he couldn't see.
True.
And then his acting was just, like, he was so big. Such a big priest.
It was the best acting in the episode, but it was just a day player, four lines, you know.
Exactly.
These shows were on a budget.
Yeah. And then yes. This is where, like, all of a sudden everyone starts blinking, like, back and forth. Bellows is like, I think I'm catching Major Nelson's delusions.
Right. And then this illusion is just to put a big fog in everything. Like.
Yeah. And this is also, they say it's a July fog. And I'm like, this episode aired in December. So, like, my realism, like, I'm like, what is even time? Like,
I wonder. It's funny because, like, I don't know if this is true. Most of those types of shows, did they always even know the order that they was going to air in, or they just kind of like plop things around?
Yeah, I mean,
they would
shift them around every now and then. I don't know if Genie's production order number is available, but yeah, this might not have been.
Well, I feel like probably based on what we talked about earlier, they probably were in some kind of order if they were doing those through lines, right? Of like Genie's birthday and stuff like that.
Yeah, and like, there's even, like, season one, because I'm watching Genie from the beginning right now, and season one is wild, because it starts and Major Nelson is engaged to a woman who is in, like, the first three episodes.
And, oh, yeah, the brunette woman,
yeah,
right?
And it's, like, the first plot is, like, how do we get rid of this woman, essentially?
She's the Brian Dunkelman of Dream of Genie.
Oh, my God.
Yes, that's accurate.
Brian
taking it
Dunkelman.
Back 20 years.
Wow.
And then there's also, like, Major Healy doesn't even find out that Genie is Genie until episode, like, I think 17. I'm about to watch it. So, like, the show goes a while with, like, Nelson's the only one that knows.
It's, right. Yeah. And then I think, you know, I'm curious, like, if then maybe it's more just, like, an in-universe thing. Like, it's always summer in Cocoa Beach, you know, because...
Yeah, look at it.
Or just they couldn't think of another thing for Major Bellows to say that would... Well, we've never had a fog in December, right? That wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
And they couldn't think of anything better than fog to happen.
Yeah.
So then they had to think of, okay, if there's fog, well, Bella's confused. Oh, July. Great. Added.
Sure. So then, Jeannie's big plan is she takes the wedding ring, she floats it into a champagne bottle, and then Genie 2 teleports in to, like, get it, and then she corks that champagne bottle and she totally bottled her sister. Smart Genie!
And they had the budget for a literal 1 second shot of evil Genie holding up a giant ring inside of the bottle, and I was like, oh my God, that's a beautiful prop that they used for 1 second. The fog was so shitty, but they had the budget for that, like, beautiful ring inside of the bottle. Interesting.
Yeah, great.
I say.
Good choices. I think good money spent. They didn't build a restaurant set. They just used the study. So, like, saving that money.
Yep.
Cutting them corners.
Again, true, that's where it came from.
Like, let's go back to the rules of magic on this show. So Genie had to create a padlocked cage around her bottle with the cork on it. But evil Genie just could... She's trapped in the champagne. No escape.
Like, no
cork
escape.
Is an un...
This soda stream? Could I trap a Genie in my soda stream bottle? Maybe. Yeah.
Unclear. Rules of magic are unclear. It's like...
Unclear.
This is definitely something that it's, I think, should be a poll podcast. It's just like, when do magic shows start breaking their own rules?
Oh, right?
That's so good.
Yeah,
that's,
it's like
so
episode
good.
One with this. Like, it does. Right. Yeah, it's, you know, it's the
it's
amount
like
of time travel they do.
Three.
God.
Oh, yeah. That's like, true. I was going to say Buffy season three. Like, there's like other slayers that are like, that are also there, even though it's the chosen one. I remember my head started to spin.
Died,
I was like, wait.
And technically that called Kendra, who then died and called Faith.
Okay.
But like, right, you have to like write all of these like things to get you out.
Oh yeah. No, it's just like, wait,
create,
how do
right?
we, oh shit. We want to do more slayers. How do we do that? Oh wait, Buffy died. Technically, like you have to, mm-hmm. to figure something out. So like the coda of the episode is Roger actually sad that he's not getting married? like when they're walking away and like Major Nelson has a champagne bomb, they're
and
leaving.
He's crying.
And I was like, is that a show for Bellows? Cause he's like, oh, I got stood up at the altar. And I'm like, I couldn't tell if that was like a put on or if he was being genuine.
Well, I think this was again a little bit of commentary here on the ridiculousness of, you know, heteronormative marriage, yeah. Right? Cause, you know, the idea being that if had been the woman who was left at the altar, that's what she would have been like,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Is that she would be crying and it would be that ridiculous because how silly is this that like you're going to be someone you've only like spent a day falling in love with and then you're going to be devastated over it, right? Which I Major Healy kind of is that character, right? Mm-hmm. He's the one who is the more ridiculous person. And I think that's what that moment was to me. It was like, how silly that you wasted all of this energy and tears on this ridiculous, not real marriage when your best friend is here and is the one who's always been there for you and is the one who will always continue to love you, right? I think that there was a little that kind of commentary in that moment, but maybe just me. Maybe I'm just reading into it.
It's funny because I think the thing that confused me was that now makes sense based on this theory that it is like a little bit of subversive and there's a bit of feminism like in the undertones of the comedy of the show, is the fact that they were walking away with the champagne bottle and there was a question of like, why are you taking the champagne bottle?
Yeah.
And then I think they were like, cause we need it. Like we actually need this because we're sad and we need to get drunk.
Yeah.
And it was like, that should be okay for two grown men to be like, we're sad and we need to like drink champagne and eat ice cream. Like maybe that actually was a bit of this kind of progressive, like feminist view of like men also get sad.
Yeah.
Right. Men get sad. And even if it was just to throw Bellows off the scent that they had evil genie bottle, at least it was still, hey, we're going to throw him off the scent by saying like, we're men and we're emotional and we're going to go cry this out. Because this was a terrible day.
Then the episode ends with they're back in the house and Jeannie's like, oh, Major Nelson, can you stand here? Or Master, can you stand here? Roger, can you stand here? And she like moves around and then she like stands next to him. Then she blinks in an invisible priest with a Bible to marry them. And that's how the episode ends. And this is where they get married. This is the wedding. And no, I'm just kidding.
But like the fact that it's like an invisible priest, yeah. Like why? Just because they wanted to do it.
Are invisible priests ordained? Like, where is he? Like, how does that work?
No, that's what I'm saying. I think they blew the budget on the other.
That's what I'm saying. They only had the. They had whatever the minimum amount they had to, uh-huh. Whatever the SAG lowest day rate was. That's all they had to spend.
No more. So, are y'all ready for some must-have facts about this episode?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So on average, around for this season of I Dream of Jeannie, around 20.7 million people watched the season.
Wow.
Every week.
Wait. Every week, 20 million people tuned in to this
on average,
TV show?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was rated 26th for the season.
This episode was the 26th. Sorry, what does that mean?
So during the TV season of 68 to 69, I Dream of Jeannie came in 26th. So there were 25.
So there were 25 other shows that had better average ratings than Jeannie.
More than 20.7 million. So
wow.
I mean, that is so wild to me, and makes much more sense when working in TV now, and the budgets are just getting slashed and slashed and slashed, and it's because less and less people, like there's, people, those amount of people do not watch TV
anymore. There's too many. There's so many shows.
TikTok.
Yeah.
I mean, there's too many options, right? Yeah. I think, or not too many. There's just a lot more. I won't say too many because I do feel we're in a golden age of TV. And I do feel like we're blessed to have thousands of options for when it comes to television.
I mean, if I just wanted to watch drag content, I would not be able to watch all of it. There's so much. Right, and I do.
True.
And in 1968, you had three chances, right? So.
And only one drag show, I Dream of Jeannie. So, but for the week, I did, using my newspapers.com account. They are not a sponsor of the podcast. I just have an account for the next 6 months because I let the membership go. which I'm using it for research, so I do need it. So the top five shows of this specific week of television, were number five was a Diana Ross and the Supremes special.
Amazing.
Number four was the Dean Martin Show. Three was Mayberry RFD, which was the Andy Griffith Show without Andy Griffith. with Ken Berry, one of my other hunky hunks. I love Ken Berry. Number two, The Lucy Show. And number one, Gomer Pyle USMC, starring legendary gay Jim Nabors. So,
wow. So Jeannie wasn't even in the top five with 20 million viewers.
No.
That's insane.
Yeah, like the ratings are just nuts. Fully crazy.
Which also just goes to show that America was also extremely gay back then. Because it's a show with the half-naked beautiful Barbara Eden and her half-naked evil twin is not rating, you know that America is... I mean, also, it is the gayest show on TV, so, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But you couldn't get the straight audience.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dean had those gold diggers, so he definitely had some hot lady for people to watch. But, that is fascinating, and I love that the number one show, I couldn't even tell you anything about it, but the number four and five, I'm like, oh, I'd love to see the Dean Martin Show and then a Diana Ross special.
Well, I'm interested to know more about Jim Nabors, because I love that... my dad loves Andy Griffith. I mean, I'm from Tennessee. Like, if you're from the South, Andy Griffith is just, you hold it, you're reverent. And I love that beloved Gomer Pyle was played by a big old gay. Like, Jim Nabors, so gay. Like, so out there gay, even for the 70s. It just tickles me that,
More gays. Yeah. More gays in TV.
Gays. Yes.
Mike Kelton, put more gays on TV. Can you do that?
Yeah, sure. Let me make a call. Hello?
Boop, boop, boop.
It's Mike Kelton calling about the gays on TV? Oh, okay. We're on it.
We're on it.
So the NBC Monday night lineup at this time was I Dream of Jeannie, followed by Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, and then the NBC Monday night at the movies. So... honestly, those two back-to-back make a lot of sense.
That does make a lot of sense. And then, do we know, was Bewitched on the same night, or was Samantha on a different night?
I think it was a different night. It was CBS.
Right.
And I don't think it was on the same time.
Well,
they were weirdly, it was weird, they were the same production company, the same lot, the same crew, they all shared a lot of stuff. Jeannie used a lot of Bewitched sets sometimes.
But it was competing shows.
And they were competitive, and people always pitted them against each other. But they were they were friendly, really. The title of this episode is a riff on How to Marry a Millionaire, which was a movie, but Barbara Eden starred in the TV show adaptation of it.
As the Marilyn Monroe character, which How to Marry a Millionaire, for anyone who has not watched this movie, needs to go watch it. It is, first of all, a hilarious movie. It really has three of the strongest, funniest women in Hollywood ever. And it is a beautiful movie to watch. It is one of my favorites. It's the humor still holds up. And also, I say this as someone who's lived in New York for about 10 years. New York is gorgeous in that movie. I just
had to marry a millionaire. I'm going to write it down.
Yeah.
A millionaire. It's so funny. Marilyn's so funny. And I haven't seen the TV movie version with Barbara, but I'm assuming Barbara was just as funny.
Yeah. It was a TV series that lasted, I think one season, maybe two seasons. I can't remember.
Also, you guys, my headphones just died. Does it sound bad now?
No, you're good. We're almost done.
Just lean in a little bit, Mike, so it sounds almost the same.
Yeah,
lean in. get up in. On IMDb, 104 people rated this episode a 6.8 out of 10. Would y'all go higher or lower, or do you think 6.8 out of 10 is a good quality rating for this?
Compared to other episodes of this series, I would rate it at least an 8 just because of the fact that Evil Jeannie is in it, who is my one of my favorite characters of TV ever, but definitely of this series.
Yeah, I would definitely give it an 8.5 for not only Evil Genie, which I agree with Jackie with, but because I think the comedy is really good. I think it's the comedy hits really hard, even, 60 years later, which is cool.
Yeah, I lolled and my jaw dropped for truly no reason, but it did. So this episode did things to me. I'll go 8.25 since I'll split the difference. Hey.
Love it.
I feel like I know the answer to this from all three of us. Who had the must-see performance of this episode?
As
Evil Genie.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally no question. I am sorry, Hayden Rourke. You're getting the whole book out of me, so I can't give you the I can't give you the must-see performance of this episode.
Although Priest, really delivered.
Swinging for the fences with this, woo, fuck, like, God, so much.
Yeah, like, I actually want, speaking of TikTok television shows, I want a TikTok episode where it's that actor coming back to the lot trying to get the footage so that he could put it in his reel. Like, that is, I want that scene. I see it so clearly.
He did that. You know, he did. I'm really proud of this work. I didn't know.
You see it.
Yeah, God.
I just don't understand why I still don't have the footage and it's a week later.
And lastly, must other people see this episode of television?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You have to see it. Just see it. See for a few. See Barbara Eden really nailing it in this episode. And, people often say that Genie as a character is like so flighty and flimsy and one dimensional. And I think what's great is here you see Barbara Eden playing against that. And also that kind of makes you realize just how much a creation of Barbara Eden, the original Genie is, right?
That
it's not just who Barbara Eden is. Like, she is a real person of these two polar poles. And I think that the fact that she's able to play both sides make you appreciate her performance as good Genie that much more.
Yes.
And that was well said, Jackie.
Yeah.
I completely agree. I said everything that you were about to say, like literally verbatim. So,
yeah. So just re-roll what I just said.
Yeah.
Just
play
like
it
go
three
back
times.
On the podcast like 30 seconds. And that's exactly what I just said.
Well, thank y'all so much. Where can people find y'all on the internet to talk about I Dream of Genie and only I Dream of Genie?
Oh my goodness. I'm at Jackie Cox NYC across all platforms.
And I am same. I'm at Jackie Cox. No, I am at Mike Kelton on all forms of social media. Yes, so let's done. Talk about I Dream of Genie.
Yes.
Let's do it.
And that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guests, Jackie Cox and Mike Kelton, for dropping by and talking about I Dream of Genie with me. Next time, I'll be discussing The Odd Couple episode, The Odd Couples. The Odd Couples is in season 3, episode 7, and you can stream it on CBS All Access. I don't know why this one particular episode is not on Hulu, but it's on CBS All Access. I guess get into it. Until then, I want to hear from all of y'all. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram, and let's talk about sitcoms, please. And you can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Brett White. That's a fun thing you can do. And if you like what you've heard, rate the show in Apple Podcasts because it helps in ways I don't understand, but it really does. So, lastly, read the words that are right at decider.com. Do I have anything genie-related that's gone up? I don't think so. But I do have a lot of Drag Race stuff that's gone up, so go read that. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to all of y'all for listening. And I will see y'all next time on Must Have CTV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.